Hi, welcome. I am Laura Finn, the web editor of BoardMember.com, and today I'm so excited to be speaking with James Copeland, the director at the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute. Jim, thanks a lot for joining me today.
Well, thanks for joining us, Laura, and thanks for all you do at BoardMember. We hope that we can provide some interesting information out there for directors and folks interested in board governance and really appreciate your willingness to showcase our work.
Well, the proxymonitor.org website has been a treasure trove for the past few years since you and your team post every single management and shareholder proposal that gets filed within the Fortune 200 companies. And you just actually released a report on early findings on the proxy season 2013 season. The trends that are emerging seem to be similar to 2012. For example, even though this isn't a federal election year, it seems that political spending and lobbying proposals have been the most filed so far. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. And we do see, it, in terms of the proposals being filed, we can't say too much yet about the votes because there aren't a lot of meetings that have been held yet. Only 20 meetings that have considered a say-on-pay vote or a shareholder proposal have been held before April 15th. But we can say something about the composition of proposals out there because 94 companies have there's more than that now, but at the time cut off for writing this report, had filed their proxy materials with the SEC. And yes, the most numerous class of proposals to have been introduced again this year are those involving corporate lobbying and political spending. Now, there is a shift in what those look like this year. They tilt more toward the lobbying and trade association memberships and less toward political spending itself, which is probably a function of us not being in the election year anymore, but that's still the most numerous. Those proposals are still the most numerous. They represent a plurality of all proposals filed.
And who's sponsoring these proposals, Jim?
Well, it varies by proposal type, but when we're talking about these political spending and lobbying proposals, there are some individual investors, but they're overwhelmingly being sponsored by labor-affiliated investors. These are typically labor union pension funds and social investors, which includes socially responsible investing funds, funds that have an express purpose for various social causes or social issues in addition to trying to maximize the returns, and investment vehicles that are affiliated with religious institutions, for instance. That's who's really behind the political spending and lobbying proposals. Now, when you look more broadly overall, you see that mostly like last year, about 47. Let me take that back a minute. We want to separate out the corporate gadflies from the sort of regular proposals. And if we do that, what I mean by corporate gadflies are the small number of individuals that repeatedly file proposals over and over. And if we just take the two most significant gadflies this year, and those are members of the Steiner family, William and Kenneth Steiner, and then John Chevedden and his family members and family trust, those individuals have introduced 24% of all proposals. Another 19% of proposals are by other individuals, including three corporate gadflies that are less active than Steiner and Chevedden. And then the rest of the proposals are almost exclusively labor union pension funds, which are 31% of proposals this year, and then religious-affiliated social investing or public policy related investors, which are 25%, have sponsored 25% of proposals this year. Only 1%, which is in keeping with past practice, of all proposals have been backed by institutional investors that aren't affiliated with organized labor or some religious or social mission.
And what have ISS and Glass Lewis said about these types of proposals? Are these people supporting the proposals?
Well, in general, ISS has been far more supportive of the political spending and lobbying proposals than have shareholders. None of these in our database dating back to 2006 that have been filed at a Fortune 250 company have passed with a majority of shareholder support, with the exception of one back in 2006, which was a political spending disclosure proposal at Amgen that got two-thirds support after management and the board actually recommended in favor of the proposal. So it got majority support, but only with the consent of management and the board. So in general, these have not gotten shareholder support. ISS has traditionally backed about 70% of them. When it comes to the basic political spending disclosure proposal, that's the one pushed by the Center for Political Accountability, Bruce Fried's group. He's a former Democratic congressional staffer who's now developed this group trying to get corporations to disclose more of their political spending. ISS generally is for those proposals. They consider others on a case-by-case basis, particularly the lobbying-related proposals. And then when it comes to some of the more idiosyncratic proposals out there, in the past we've seen a number asking companies to post their political spending in newspapers filed by the corporate gadfly Evelyn Davis, who's notably absent from this year's proxy process.
That's one. Ask you about that.
Yeah, that's one change we've seen year over year. And she's in her 80s, and this year it doesn't look like she's taking a role here. But those generally, ISS and other proxy advisors have opposed. They've also tended to oppose proposals that for instance, prohibit corporate political spending, which obviously is a more extreme step than disclosing such spending.
So it sounds like what you're saying about these kinds of proposals is that without management also getting behind the idea, these proposals don't really have a chance of getting implemented.
I think that's right. But a lot of times management will accommodate, at least to some extent, what various advocates here are asking for, because they don't want a publicized fight on this. And to some degree, for any individual, a lot of this stuff is already disclosed. I mean, for instance, political action committees spending is clearly disclosed. Lobbying is clearly disclosed. What's really at play to some degree that's not disclosed in some other forum are trade association membership dues. These are for the Business Roundtable, Chamber of Commerce, and what have you, or various industrial-type trade associations, and then various 501c4 public interest groups, which can spend in the political process, nonprofit organizations, are not currently disclosed under federal law. And so to some extent, some companies may say, well, we'll disclose this sort of stuff. Some of them may not participate in this anyway, or they may just say, well, we're going to disclose it, even if that to some degree jeopardizes the group we're a part of. It's sort of a classic free rider problem. They benefit from these sorts of groups, but they also may peel off and let themselves do what the activists say. So the activists have gained some headway here in this area, but it's not been with the support of a majority of shareholders. And we've actually seen instances where shareholders overwhelmingly opposed these proposals, and then the next year management basically did what the activists were pushing for.
Interesting. Well, to change tracks a little bit, to get into a shareholder proposal that I think has a greater chance of getting majority support, another early trend that's emerging seems to be shareholder proposals being filed to split the chairman and CEO roles.
Exactly. And these proposals, they were the second most popularly proposed, I mean, the second most numerous class of proposals last year as well, which was an uptick from prior practice. And this year, that's continued even more. 16% of all shareholder proposals so far this year have called for the company to split the chairman and CEO roles. The support for these, it's still been relatively thin. Only two of these passed last year out of over 30 that were introduced, but that's still significantly more support than we've seen from, say, the corporate political spending proposals, which have never passed without management support. So and we saw last year a slight uptick in support for these proposals. They were getting on average about 34% of the shareholder votes, so just over a third, and that was up from 30% looking at 2006 through 2011. So they've trended upward a little bit. The labor unions have made a big push here. 47% of all the proposals we've seen this year were backed by labor-affiliated investors, and another 47% by corporate gadflies, basically Chevedden and Steiner, as well as Gerald Armstrong and James McRitchie, who are the four of the five most active corporate gadflies this year, the only ones that don't have a social investing focus. So these have been getting significantly more traction, but they're still unlikely to pass, unlikely to get a majority of support. So.
Well, and I think it's worth pointing out, too, that there are some companies who are trying to sidestep the proposal altogether by making changes. Would you talk a little bit about what Goldman Sachs did in the wake of receiving this shareholder proposal?
Yeah, absolutely. So Goldman has been under pressure the last couple of years here, and some of the financial companies in general. J.P. Morgan Chase, for instance, is facing one of these with Jamie Dimon, and it's a big push. The New York Times wrote it up. What Goldman's done is they've basically said, we're going to, instead of separating our chairman and CEO role, we're going to give additional powers to our lead independent director. And this is the second year in a row that Goldman's sort of said, we're going to change the powers that are allocated among our board to give the lead independent director more power on the board. And in making that, taking that position, Goldman was able to get the activists to withdraw the proposal, so there's no vote there. And part of the concern for companies facing these proposals, and the reason they're particularly willing to negotiate here, is these proposals, if they pass, can be viewed to some degree as a vote of no confidence in the corporate management. Because basically what you're saying is our CEO needs a boss. He needs a chairman to look over his shoulder or her shoulder. Or conversely, needs to give up day-to-day management of the corporation. So that's not a statement you want a majority of your shareholders to make. And so the companies are highly sensitive to these. And sort of I've looked at these in the past. I haven't really this year looked at it in depth. But in the past, I've shown that labor investors are significantly more likely to invest in these types of proposals than others, and correlated that with industries that were particularly sensitive for labor's interests. One of the theories here is that labor may be bargaining with management and trying to get management to do things in labor's interests rather than in shareholders' interests by pushing this specific class of proposal.
That's an interesting way to look at it. And just to say the flip side of the argument you just made about a vote of no confidence, I think some people would argue that it's simply good governance to make sure there's a checks and balances in place that maybe wouldn't be in place if the chairman and the CEO were the same person.
Yeah, absolutely.
And obviously that's something that gets debated.
And there's clearly a theoretical rationale for this. I think the empirical evidence on this is quite mixed. In other words, there's some studies that show it makes no difference, some studies that show it helps, some studies that show it hurts to separate the chairman and CEO role. I think each company's different on its face. Even when you look at say what ISS has done here, they've only backed about 68% of these proposals historically. So it's not as if even the proxy advisory firms are endorsing a one size fits all role here, which is why corporate leadership tends to be sensitive to this. But certainly there are some investors that would consistently back these because they think it's a good governance model.
You know, this is a somewhat controversial proposal, and there's another somewhat controversial proposal that's very big this year, which is board declassification proposals, or we're requesting that your board gets voted on annually, that all of the members are up for re-election on an annual basis. Now, your data set, which is the Fortune 250, doesn't include that many companies receiving these proposals, at least so far. But overall, I think this is going to be a major issue this proxy season. The Shareholder Rights Project out of Harvard and the corporate law firm Wachtell Lipton have been going back and forth with memos arguing the pros and cons of board declassification. What are you seeing on this?
Yeah, just what you're saying. I mean, first of all, even within the Fortune 250, we've seen a 50% uptick in these proposals this year relative to last year. But we're still only talking about 6% of all proposals involving board declassification. The big reason for that is most of the Fortune 250 companies already have annual director elections and don't have staggered boards. So a lot of this fight is taking place with mid-cap and smaller companies that are more likely to have staggered board structures still, whereas the big companies typically do have annual director elections at this point.
Important point to make.
And what we're seeing is we've had three of these come for a vote already. All three passed with roughly 80% of the vote. And that's consistent with what we've seen over the last 7 years. We've seen in general the overwhelming majority of these have passed. About 5 in 6 of these have gotten majority support historically. And I think the reason is that most investors, at least institutional investors, tend to agree with Professor Bebchuk on this point more so than the Wachtell-Lipton side. In other words, saying that by having annual election of directors, the company is more prone to takeover threats. Because if you stagger the board elections, then it takes 2 years to mount a credible proxy fight, traditional takeover battle for the company if it's underperforming. And there's empirical evidence that's suggested that threat of takeovers that's heightened when you have annual direction of electors does generate shareholder value. And the empirical evidence there is stronger than it is for most of these other classes of proposals, which is why this type of proposal, unlike others, is one that historically has gained traction. Obviously, there's some dissenting views there, but institutional investors tend to agree with this. So it's controversial, but it's not really controversial in the institutional investor community, where we see overwhelming support for this class of proposal, which is something we certainly haven't seen for most others.
Yeah. Well, I see that we are running low on time, and I had so many questions I wanted to ask you about executive compensation, social policy proposals, the so-called corporate gadflies, but I would encourage everyone to look at your early findings report, and they could find that. We have a link to it at boardmember.com. I know proxymonitor.org has the early finding posted. And before we close, I would like to ask you what you'll be watching for as proxy season rolls on.
Certainly, Laura. And basically, in addition to the say-on-pay votes, which are always going to be interesting to watch, these are the advisory votes on executive compensation. When it comes to the shareholder proposals, we're really looking at four classes of proposals in particular. The splitting of chairman and CEO, which we talked about, between now and May 16th or so, we see a number of companies in the Fortune 250 facing votes there, which we outline in the report, at least 16. Then, of course, the political spending and lobbying proposals, and there's various of those proposals coming up in the coming month. The board declassification proposals we talked about. And then finally, proxy access. We don't see a lot of these proposals. We didn't see a lot of them last year. But this is the type of proposal that basically says if you're a shareholder that meets certain thresholds, you can nominate your own directors to the board and get on the company's proxy ballot. The
right.
SEC passed a rule to this effect that the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit vacated a couple of years ago. We do see shareholders now starting to push these proposals in at a few companies. Walt Disney faced one, and it didn't get majority support, but it did better than most shareholder proposals. Verizon faces one coming up at its May 2nd meeting. Hewlett-Packard, conversely, introduced its own management proposal on this, and it's been under some heat from shareholders, which probably pushed it to do this, and that passed overwhelmingly. So I want to keep an eye on this proxy access fight and see if shareholders are going to push any more on this and how they're going to vote on them.
It's certainly an exciting time of year for those of us interested in corporate governance. So I thank you so much for your time today, Jim, and I can't wait to get in touch with you as proxy season continues on to see what the other trends are that begin to emerge.
Thanks so much, Laura, and we appreciate you participating.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure.